Welcome to the Brothers in Farms podcast. Today we have episode 4 of the Breeder Spotlight, featuring Hard Liquor, talking about his current breeding projects, future plans, and seed preservation. Don't forget to hop over to biffbeans.com for some of the best auto flower and photo strains on the market at prices that everyone can afford. Okay, good to have you, Hard Liquor. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
So, number one question I've got to ask, seeing as the kind of podcast about kind of cannabis and Brothers in Farms, is where did you get the name Hard Liquor?
Ah, man. Yeah, I knew this was coming, but hard liquor goes way back for me, and I definitely, you know, have an alcoholism problem, and I was big into rum, and I used it as a screen name on some video games, and it just kind of stuck. And since then, I've actually stopped drinking hard liquor like all the time. It's maybe like here and there, but my Instagram name is Closet Medicine, and that's kind of where I made the change towards, you know, bettering myself with medicine as cannabis, you know, cannabis as medicine, rather.
I can dig that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm working on. I kind of changed the nickname to Hard or whatnot, just keeping it as that. But it's kind of hard to change your name after, you know, meeting all these people, and that's kind of how they know you at.
Yeah, for sure. But it's kind of like the part of the past that's fading away just a little bit now.
Yeah, we're working on it. We'll see what the future looks like, and maybe that will come in the form of just like naming, you know, my set of seeds and my creations with a blanket term that more people could relate to me with that name, and more personal people, such as on the Discord, could just know me as Hard or HL or whatever they want to call me.
Right, well, after listening to this, there you go. Because yeah, I'm sure they're all going to listen anyway. So how did you kind of find Biff to start with? What kind of brought you to Brothers in Farms?
Brothers in Farms, I came onto Discord and somebody had invited me to Growers Collective. And then right away, somebody hit me up and said, hey, you should, you know, we like your stuff. You should hang, you know, check out Brothers in Farms. And that was Rusty, actually way back. And I joined Brothers in Farms in September 2019, and it's just been gone from there. I mean, the first part of me being in there, I, you know, slacked off a little bit. I had my own things going on, and after a certain amount of time, I really like found my place in Brothers in Farms and kind of moved up the ranks. And now, being a moderator, I'm really trying to progress everything that's going on in Brothers in Farms in the right ways.
That's awesome. So it's great to kind of speak to somebody at this level. That's kind of, we can come back to it in a while, but doing all your breeding, stuff like that, and kind of progressed up from just kind of maybe growing on your own stuff. So kind of looking forward to carrying on this chat. So I know kind of looking at all your stuff, you're really into preservation of seeds and lines and things. I know it's a big passion of yours. So I don't know. Could you tell us a bit about maybe, I know you've got a huge collection of seeds. I know that. So, could you kind of give us a bit of an insight into what started you off doing that? Why you're kind of keeping it going?
I think the biggest thing is that, you know, I don't want to see Monsanto and all these like lab bred strains come and ruin these seed markets with GMO products and stuff like that. It really takes away from what people are creating now, you know, hands-on small breeders and big breeders. But the land race stuff is going to change forever. Like, there's a point where things aren't pure anymore, and people brought other genetics into these places where you're not getting the true form. So the most that I can collect now is much better for the future. I've been doing this just even a couple of years, just making a huge collection by trading and making my own seeds and just seeing, just there's a huge spectrum of seeds out there. So it's just right now is a prime time to be collecting and be finding the best things that you can before, you know, eventually legalization coming forth bigger, allowing these people with money to come in and just do that lab bred stuff. It just really puts me off towards what they can do with marker assisted breeding and things like that.
So do you think that these kind of robust strains that these guys are going to make mass produce, do you think they're going to leak into the wild as such and eventually take over some of the Landrace strains? Is that your fear?
I mean, it's happening left and right. Just it's really hard to find wild patches, especially with worldly prohibition and just getting ravaged by police, and things aren't as free as it used to be before like the future happened. I mean, we're going into the future and we are the future. So the things that used to be are still not going to be the same as, like, I always want to bring up Jamaica, and Jamaica is such a small place to have so many genetics flying around, and just understanding pollen can travel so far in the right landscapes with the right wind. So it's hard to keep out outside genetics and say that this is the true land race stuff. If you're not sure, like, it takes a lot to get to the form where it's been selected by humans before that were only local to the area.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I suppose you're right. Certainly Jamaica, it's not a big place, is it? So if anybody takes anything of, you know, a couple of photos out there, a couple of males on the go, it's going to cross-pollinate.
Right, so that's why some certain strains, like, I got to have no idea about lamb's bread and things like this, that it's hard to find a true form of that to, you know, Cali weed getting there.
Yeah, it's certainly kind of going back again, crikey, I'd be back to early 90s. Me and some friends, we would go to India and up into Nepal. And obviously back then, it was all kind of big, tall, long plants. Still is now, I imagine. But it's very much on the tourist trail. And I'm just wondering, you know, could that happen on a bigger scale in India? You know, places like that where you're up in the mountains, but still then it only takes one plant, doesn't it, to kind of pervert that, should we say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not trying to name drop people, but there are people just doing experiments to find landrace strains, and they meet these villagers that have been, like, growing this over and over again and breeding it to what it is as their medicine. And they're saying, hey, here's some seeds, and we're going to take your seeds, and then we're going to go work it in a big grow op and, like, reproduce this for sale. We're going to give you some of these genetics, and it's across the board, you know, all these different countries. I mean, it's just kind of absurd to me that if they're trying to collect these landrace strains, like, wouldn't they think to, you know, have more caution, I guess, as it wasn't their intention. Still, it's just happening wherever there is to be had. Right now, you just got to, you know, pick up what you can. I mean, it was really hard for me to get landrace strains at first. But you network and you find these people that are actually, like, been working these seeds, like old school seeds, especially people who have seeds in their collection from their uncle or something that gave it to them, or their, you know, their relative was out in the war and picked up these seeds from wherever. It's like, those are pretty valuable seeds as long as they're stored.
Yeah, for sure. So how long do you think you'll be able to kind of keep seeds before they start to deteriorate over time, do you think?
See, that's a big thing. I mean, things that I'm sure I'm not gonna, you know, be able to work with for a while, I've got to store them like freezer. But with the rest of the collection, there's a majority of it, it will be fine with just stabilized temperatures around 60 degrees. And you don't want to deal with humidity and stuff like that. They're just, like, all in sealed containers.
Yeah.
You definitely don't want to keep them in light or anything like that, or any heat. I mean, just a stable temperature in the dark. So Some people, if you're freezing them or putting them in the fridge, there's actually a term for that. It's called stratification. And certain seeds kind of need a little bit of cold stratification before you pop them, especially some of the landrace varieties. They're getting some seeds from Siberia, in Russia, in Central Asia, things that are used to the cold, and they need to go through that winter process. It kind of shocks the seeds into germinating once you put them in the freezer or whatnot for a couple of days. But not all seeds are like that, and people don't really understand that. Cannabis is a lot of the time it's a tropical type of plant.
So for those colder strains, those like that, I'm going to take it they have a harder shell, something like that perhaps, which will kind of protect them. So is it about weakening down that harder shell for the cold climate ones before they'll pop?
Yeah, that's a good point too. Sometimes that comes with just over maturity due to the fact that some of them come from feral fields that have been, seeding themselves over and over, and maybe those seeds have spent a little bit too much time maturing. That can happen with any strain that you're making, but especially those wild ones, they'll have different techniques of kind of pre-cracking it or rubbing it on sandpaper and things like that in order to get the water to penetrate.
So your current strains, because I know you've got kind of two on the go at the moment, which is aptly named Hard Liquor F1, and you've got Bear Mace F1 as well. So can you kind of wind it right back as far as you can with Hard Liquor and kind of give us a bit of an insight into that?
Right, so the hard liquor was actually, shout out to Brothers and Farms and Bellanos. Bellanos released the Cabernet F1s that I was running, and this female just really stood out to me in its structure and the amount of frost that it put out. Just the terps were unbelievable, like grapefruit type of terps. And I had an auto male at the time, which was Mandalorian Anvil F6, that had these really tight clusters with half pink balls, if you would, these half pink clusters coming out. I just needed to hit that plant, and both of those were hit with the same male, but that one female was extremely impressive to me, and it was something that would complement the male and the line of the male, because with the Anvil line, the Anvil F6 that I was running it, you'd see the females have, it was always purple or pink, all these colors in that line, guaranteed almost, because of bringing it to F6 and being homogenous. But it has these coffee, dark, spicy types of terps to it, and flower density like isn't all there to me. I think that it just could have gotten a little bit better. So
Okay.
with the Cabernet F1 getting hit with that male, I've grown some of them, but a lot of my testers have just blown it out of the park, including Bellano himself. It's just been crazy to see, and I'm really just about to start popping a bunch of them to look through the different phenos to make the F2 right now, just because that's been heavily requested. So the reason that it was called hard liquor is because with the Cabernet and the Anvil, it's just kind of, you can imagine, I don't know who suggested that, but we just rolled with it.
It's perfect.
Yeah, I know, it is perfect. That's why I'm like, oh geez, let's do it. I really want to work that in as a regular strain, and I know everyone wants FEMS. But I just want to line this up and line breed it, find the F2s and maybe make a few different versions of the F2 using one of the males and a few different females, because testers have shown a lot of different colors. There's the dark purple and the pink all over. There's the green on the outside and pink on the inside type of one, and then there's a just huge amount of frost coming out. So I want to make sure that I'm capitalizing on all the different traits that I can in the different females, because there's also taller, chunky spears versus shorter, chunky football type of phenotypes as well.
Cool. I've seen. I don't try who I saw as recently. Is it Poe that's been grown out of some?
Oh, Poo. Yeah, Poo.
Poo. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, he grew those out. I didn't really get too many updates, and just got the updates at the end, and those were absolutely ginormous plants. So,
yeah,
just
big,
everything
big and
personal.
Those, weren't they?
Yeah, Donkey had some. Donkey is one of our members in the Discord, and he's getting some pink ones that he just harvested. And Jay is a big one that's been growing for me. Another member in the Discord. That's been running through both of my strains, actually, as well as JSK, who, you know, maybe people know. I think he's going to be in the previous podcast.
Yeah, he's in the roundtable one, as a few of them are.
Yeah, the roundtable.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've seen JSKs recently. I've seen those because he's been kind of starting to post a few more now they're in flower. And they look pretty awesome as well.
Right, it's just they're blowing it out. I mean, I think the Cabernet line has kind of smaller plants too, where the anvil complements that in the way where there's bigger phenos from that anvil. The anvil line, I think, really wanted to dominate some of those. So I want to make sure I have a good mix in the offspring.
So. Is working with the Mandalorian Anvil, is that something that you kind of discussed? It's Dan, isn't it, from Mandalorian. Did you kind of ask him about that, or did you just think, fuck it, let's grow it?
Right, with Dan, I mean, we've gone back and forth for, I guess, a couple years now, and I sent him a lot of those F1s for him to do whatever with, and I've been kind of keeping tabs on him and sending him updates of some of the tester things, saying, you know, you should try to cross this with something or try to at least grow it. But yeah. He's been a really great guy. He's been a really great mentor to me over the couple years. And I've got nothing bad to say about the guy. I love his work. Put a lot into it. He started on autoflower.net. And you can see some of his past work, and his Instagram is full duplex_AFN or something like that. It should come right up if you look up Mandalorian Genetics as well.
Awesome. On that subject, what's your Instagram?
My Instagram is Closet Medicine. That was something that was the transition of me kind of getting away from hard liquor. Hard liquor in real life, kind of too. Like I mentioned before, cannabis is a huge part of my life. With as far as medicine and anxiety, and as long as I smoked for 10 or 12 years before I even saw, you know, a living budding female cannabis plant, I think it was in that moment that I started learning right away.
So another one of kind of. I know you're really into kind of preserving these seeds. So do you kind of hunt out photo period plants for cuttings? Is that something that you're into and preserving actual mothers?
Yeah, that's definitely it. I mean, right now I want to cycle through as many photo period seeds as I can to find the best females that I can to keep them around and work with them, as well as like what feels smoke. With the autoflowers, you can't really save a cutting around or anything like that. They're just like, you can clone them, but they won't stick around. So with the autos, it's much easier to pop a bunch of them and then see what happens and see the best and see what to cross. And you can only preserve them in seed form.
So. What have you got in mind for future lines? I know you're kind of currently working on the hard liquor and bear mace, but what have you got? Have you got kind of anything you know that you want to do? I know. Kind of looking at what you've got stashed in that big cupboard of seeds of yours, I'm sure there's plenty that you want to do.
Oh man, it goes on and on. I'm really looking for deep chunk. Just like any IBL version, That probably is like an advertisement if anyone's listening. But I'd love to trade for any deep chunk. Tom Hill is great. I love his work. I'm looking through a bunch of stuff, and I like to, keep a lot of Brothers and Farms gear around in the arsenal, as well as trying to breed it. So the biggest thing, I guess, is the Australian Bastard as far as longevity in the future goes. I'm looking through a lot of Australian Bastard and even Autoflowering Bastard. But just to go further into that is Australian Bastard is this mutation in this wild plant that was found in Australia, and it has these mini, mini leaves that kind of look like duck foot, but they're not really related. They have a lot of different expressions in their leaves. But one thing I've noticed, especially in Auto Bastard 1.0 by Hybridtech, is that there's barely any trimming to do or defoliation, and the flowers just get rock hard. It's just been ridiculous. The apical dominance stopped just with one training. I just tied it over one day, and all the side branches came up and stayed even with the top, which is a huge trait for what I'm looking for, as far as I like a nice canopy.
So naturally, it doesn't produce smokable cannabis. Am I right there?
Well, it will produce, I think, some people that are put off by it is because the THC content is maybe 5% or something like that. So it's
Right.
not really something, that's going to do it for people. But I think that it has a lot of potential to be outcrossed into different things and be experimented with, where as long as you can come out with that mutation, which is a recessive trait, then you'll be all set.
Cool. I have seen you post a couple of pictures of kind of you growing that, and I didn't know that history behind that plant. So I just kind of assumed it was some sort of freak show that you were kind of you'd found and just thought, what the fuck is that he's got?
Right, like people think it might be related to duck foot or freak show, but that's just not true.
Right.
They're completely different mutations, and once you cross these things, they do act funny, but you're not. I mean, some of them come like Australian Bastard crossed with freak show. Freak show kind of looks like ferns. People aren't familiar with that. Regular looking cannabis leaves. So they're totally different things, and just needs to be worked one way or the other. That's why if you look at a chart of dogs in the last 100 years, these different breeds have like changed immensely. There's no way to get those original traits back. So with back crossing, you're going to find that you'll stabilize more traits from the previous parent or grand, depending on what you're looking for. So sometimes people ask, why don't you bring something to F40 or something like that's kind of what I was wondering too when I first started, like why wouldn't you make the best homogenous, consistent strain? But after a while with line breeding, you get those issues just like the dog. So
I'm with you.
line breeding is just taking an offspring, like you have two parent genetics and you make this F1. And you take the offspring and you cross the brothers and sisters, and you're inbreeding. So you'll get to F1 and F2. It's a filial generation. So back crossing is maybe you have some F3s and you have some F1s of the same seeds, and you pop them both, or you're saving, F1 pollen from the grandparent of the F. And you're seeing a lot of good traits in the offspring, but you're not really seeing some of the traits that you were looking for. You can kind of get that back cross going to make it more towards one side or the other in terms of what the parents were.
Awesome. I get that now.
Right, and reversing is when you have a female plant, you're some type of silver solution or something that would block ethylene gas from the plant, which is just, in the normal air. The female plants need the ethylene gas in order to produce female parts. So when you're spraying colloidal silver or silver thiosulfate, or gibberellic acid 3. It's blocking the receptors from receiving the ethylene gas. In return, it creates male parts. So the male parts coming from a female plant, it's basically herming, but they don't, you know, you don't call it herming because it's a chemical and chemically induced herm versus a herm from stress, like light leaks or just, you know, root bound or anything like that. So those pollen sacs will produce pollen that will only have the female chromosomes. So once you use that pollen onto a different plant or the same plant, if you're hitting the same exact plant with that pollen, it's considered their S1, which is selfing. And people think that that will make like all the seeds look kind of like that one plant, but it actually brings out a lot of recessive traits from the parent generation and the grandparent generation that you know you won't see in that trait. So it's actually the opposite.
So it's S1, and it's a bit more like Russian roulette with the previous two parent generation traits. So like you say, so if somebody was to S1 hard liquor that you've kind of produced there, it's going to be pretty random pulling out genetic lines from bits of the Mandalorian, the Anvil, and bits of the Cabernet, things like that. But it's not going to be
right,
a consistent
exactly.
crop.
If you're bringing it to a further generation, it's more likely to be more stable due to being homogenous. So it's going to bring out those same traits from those crosses, you know, reversing an F1 versus an F6 or something.
So when you're kind of growing, are you solely growing in tents, or do you ever grow outdoor crops?
Yeah, I do outdoor, and I prepare them indoor and just try to get them as big as I can. Just because of local laws, I just try to stick with a couple big mamas outside to keep, you know, just for personal smoke, honestly, is mostly what I do with my outdoor.
So two personal trees, then I take it you try to get them as big as possible if there's just a couple.
Right. I think last year I started the plants, and when I put them outside, there were bushes that were maybe, you know, 3x3, 3 foot tall, 3 foot wide. And at the end of the season, the biggest one was, 9 feet tall.
That's
multi-branch, just big hedge. I mean, I've had family members just right by it because they don't notice it, thinking it's just like a little hedge or something.
That's a lot of callers sticking out of that.
Yeah.
So your indoor grows is kind of, what methods do you use there? Because people would be interested in that. Is how do you germ your seeds to start with? It's something that I've kind of asked Belenos in the previous podcast, and I think kind of people are kind of keen to know these things. So when you germ in, are you straight into soil, or do you mix it up?
Depends on the seed, but like maybe 90% of the time I'm doing the Mephisto germ method, which is wet paper towels folded in a DVD case, wrapped in a towel or a t-shirt, like on a warm surface, like a heat mat. And that's worked a lot of the time. I mean, that's barely let me down at all. There are a lot of different germination methods, especially with Australian Bastard. They tell you to try to direct sow. But I always try in the paper towel first, just to see. I don't soak them. I know people soak them.
Yeah.
I don't even bother with that. I mean, I'm 24 hours into some seeds and they're already popping left and right. Half of them are already germinating.
So are you kind of planting them at that point when tails are only just bursting out of the seed, or are you waiting to get any kind of length?
I'll wait a little bit just so I know it's going to keep going and doesn't need to be pre-cracked. Because if I go to put it into the soil and it's just barely cracked, the little root is less than an eighth of an inch out. Usually once it's like an eighth of an inch or bigger, I'll be putting it right into soil. I use Sunshine Mix number 4 Advanced, and that's 50% peat, 25% cocoa, and 25% perlite. And that's something that it's just given me the best results with that, with the easiest process that I could write up. I mean, I don't pH anything and things grow beautifully. It's like one every 30 plants is having a problem. So
I suppose if you've got plenty of peat in there, that's going to kind of buffer your water to a degree anyway. If you're not pHing or anything, it's going to be fairly consistent.
Right, and I don't have to, you know, it takes a bit to dry out, so I don't have to water every day like cocoa.
Yeah.
I am moving towards some automated systems just because of the ease of it, but I run through processes where I stress my plants underwatering and underfeeding, just especially some of the ones that I've kept around for a while. So if they're not really performing, it's off with their heads, you know.
kind of root out the weak. You're not the first person that said that. So do you plant directly into your final pot, or are you kind of, well, say, let's say autos for instance, are you final potting
right,
straight away
on
your pot? Yeah,
autos I definitely do, and I have been seeing some stuff, especially, you know, from Full Duplex and Mandalorian Genetics. He's been working with people who have been experimenting with seeding trays and then transplanting them all after a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
I think it's about 7 days or so. There's some information about ruderalis that just because of, you know, the time limit that it puts you on, it's tough to be transplanting it, but it's just the way that it works. I mean, the ruderalis seeds, when you're planting them in a smaller container, the roots can max out, like the tap root of the seed is basically going to shoot itself down, see how much root space it has, and then kind of base the growth off of that. So that's why different size containers will be different size plants, or different size watering systems too can affect that.
Sure. So initial feeding then, if you're using kind of the sunshine mix, I take it you're just pretty much water at the start.
Well, sunshine mix is inert, so I'll actually saturate the pots with nutrient water before I even plant the seed. That's okay. Never burnt anything for me. Just because once the seed pops, it takes a little bit for it to actually dry out the pot unless my temperatures are high, which my temperatures are typically low. A lot of the different, you know, variables with trying to teach people how to grow or teach people what I do, it's like my setup is not going to look like yours.
Of course. So what kind of nutrients are you using when you're pre-soaking?
I used a bunch of stuff in the past, just went through a bunch of different things, and I think the easiest thing for me is the mega crop one part. I mean, it should have been so simple, and I'm going to be moving towards the automated watering system like Blue Mats or something, and they typically advise for just plain water using those. So with the mega crop, you might get some more clumping in the lines. So I'm going to move towards the GH Maxi a little bit, even though that's a little bit different from what I'm used to. I just want to make sure that my lines aren't going to be clogging and see the difference. And if that doesn't work for me, I might just even try the mega crop and add some enzymes or something. There's some enzyme products that people have been talking about to help, keep the lines clear.
Yeah, I'm using Blue Mats at the moment, and Mega Crop. So touch wood, I've had no blockages yet to reassure you. I chucked a wave maker in the res, keep it moving. So, what about curing? It's kind of like everybody seems to have their own methods of curing, and we were discussing this last with Belenos, and he says he doesn't really cure too much. He's pretty keen to get it smoked.
afraid to smoke it once it's dry. I always heard that you checking the dryness is the biggest thing. You don't want to put it into the jars when it's too wet and too dry, obviously. So what I try to do is you know, depending on the environment, it's going to be different amount of time to get to this point. But you know, after a certain amount of time, I'm just in there every day checking, you know, smaller branches to see if they'll make a cracking noise, but not break cleanly off. But they won't just bend like rubber, you know? So once they start crackling, but they're not just gonna rip off immediately, then I would just start trimming process because the trimming does take a little bit of time. So once you got the trimming done, you put it into the jars, and I use jars. I mean, 1/2 gallon jars or smaller jars. It depends on how much you're putting into it, because you don't want the jar filled up to the brim. There's a lot of these little secrets or little tips that you learn through the process of talking to everybody and looking at guides and things like that. But you don't. Here, let me think. As far as going into the jars, I mean, you want to be able to burp them, and you want to store them properly out of the light.
So how often do you burp those jars? Daily.
Right, with burping, it'll be opening it in the first, once it's trimmed and once it's jarred up, I'll open it. The first 3 days, open it for about 1/2 hour, and I can feel the difference now, like after experience. If I'm touching a nug and it seems a little bit moist, I'll actually pour the jar out
Okay.
and leave it on the table or something, like a plastic surface, for about 30 minutes. Put it back into the jar. And usually it doesn't take more than doing that one or two times at the beginning. But once you get it to the right point, and you can tell just by smoking it, but I usually do it. I do it every other day for the next, 6 days, and then every few days, and then once a week. And by the time, you keep burping it slowly and slowly, where 2 months go by and it's going to be totally different from when you harvested it.
Gonna have a nice aroma by that point.
Right, as long as you're doing it the right way. And sometimes I'm taking nugs out, to sample, and I'll start smoking from certain jars that are curing. I always try to make sure to put the amount of flower into a jar that's the right size for it. And you just only want, 15 or so percent of air in the jar. You don't want it packed full or too empty, or else it'll just start drying out too much.
Awesome. So most people kind of people that'll be listening to this podcast, but there's people within the community. So what kind of role do you play within Brothers in Farms now? Because you were saying earlier on that you just came in and met people, introduced you to Brothers in Farms. So what do you do now for Brothers in Farms?
Right, the biggest thing is just my activity. I love to go on there and interact with people, but I have been doing a lot of the proving ground servers where people enter, where anybody can join our Discord, but they kind of have to answer some questions to make sure you'll be a good fit. So I've been doing a lot of interviews for that, where you'll be able to talk to me, one on one. Sometimes it's really friendly, and I have great conversations with a lot
Yeah.
of the new people. And sometimes I'm just a, kind of different times where people don't seem like a good fit. It's a tough thing, but honestly, a lot of the people coming through have just been great. Some people, like I like to tell them, is you either find a family in here or you don't.
A big mama bear.
Yeah, so people think that they're all in it, and you bring them in and they don't show their face, and we just don't like a lot of lurkers. So I'm really trying to feel people out and get to know people and help them understand, what we do in building the community and what we're evolving around, and help people feel comfortable with coming in and sharing their grows.
Awesome. So, which other breeders do you think are you kind of looking at? I kind of always ask this question because there's a few of the guys that always catch my eye. So, have you got your eye on any of the other breeders' work at the minute, other than your own, within Brothers in Farms?
Oh, for sure. I've always looked at Bucky's stuff, and I am growing some kind of exclusive stuff that he's made. But I've got some of his seeds that are they're definitely going in the ground pretty soon. Jet is another one that he's been putting out all the peanut butter crosses and other crosses, and I know for sure he's popping a lot of good stuff right now. Baz has always really been close to me, dude. I love that guy. He is definitely a really good guy, and I've kind of sent him a bunch of stuff to try to do some work with. So we'll see. I think that he's gonna be able to make some killer stuff coming up. That's gonna compete with his previous gear.
I have seen a teaser photograph of a tent of Baz's with about 30 pots with soil in. So I'm presuming that means he's getting ready to play.
I mean, that's the thing. I think that they're all great, and like, hate to not shout anybody out, but all the people that are doing work, I mean, even the some of the newer applicants that are trying to become vendors, they're walking through their projects with us, so we can get that to a test phase and then approved afterwards. Man, there's some good stuff coming up for sure.
So one of the kind of things that I know happens between the moderators on Brothers in Farms is you got awarded the King of 2020 at the end of the year. What did that mean?
Yeah, that's it was kind of a mystery to me a little bit too, but I kind of, it's kind of you understand what it means too, because I put a lot of my time into what we're doing here. And I'm trying to, be the best person I can. And I started just as a new person, like anyone else that's coming. And it just takes that time to get to know everyone and align with everybody. So at the end of the day, I think a lot of people were thinking about me in high regards. Honestly, I didn't really expect it. We even had a chat about who were gonna, crown the king. I think Bucky was king last year. And,
Yeah.
I had a lot of suggestions for other people because I think that there are awesome people in the community that, just like you, man, like you and Ilzo, I mean, you both are really, really being awesome to do all this podcast stuff and take the time to do it, obviously with the different time zones.
Cool. Well, congratulations on being the king. And I look
Yeah,
forward to
I'm
meeting you.
grateful. I didn't really know what to say at first, and now I'm just like, trying not to rub it in anyone's face. But
But you're the
you gotta wait till next year, bud.
king. Well, awesome. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us again, Hard. And
Yeah, that was amazing. I think everyone who's listening at this point, man, props to you. Thank you guys, the whole community. Thank to all the moderators. I mean, we're definitely got a lot of people that I can't even name everybody. I'm blessed to be part of such an awesome thing, and I think anybody that's listening should definitely come into the server or try their hand at interviewing. Maybe you'll get me to interview with you.
awesome. Couldn't ask for a better advert. Oh, cheers, buddy.
Yeah, man, cheers.
Well, that's the end of episode 4. Stay tuned for the next episode and our new series where we have a community roundtable session with community members. Remember, hop on over to biffbeans.com, buy yourself some cracking little seeds such as Ghost Tooth, White Martian, Slurry Cake, you name it. Dive on in. See you next time.